For example, Marvel. Initially, Marvel was a comic book company. And of course, Marvel comics were very popular. You still have people who are passionate about those. But now it's become more of a collector's item. Who is, you know, actually reading? Children are just online gaming and all of those things. There was a time when, you know, their future was really, you know, unpredictable, and they didn't know what to do next, you know. And however, the fact that there was dissatisfaction again in the customers, competition was coming in, different formats were coming in, they decided to get into content which was visual. They decided to get into filming. And initially, the films they produced actually failed. So they had a few initial productions which failed and did not do well. But they learned from those. And then they learned from, you know, the kind of content the customers expect from Marvel, the kind of content, the kind of, you know, production value, the kind of feel-good effect they need to have on their customers. And then, of course, based on the current viewing patterns, they had a lot of hits like Blade and X-Men and all of these. Later on, Marvel was, of course, taken, and even in the initial phase of their filming, their revenue model wasn't working to their advantage. But then they had a tie-up where they put up their they had a tie-up with Merrill Lynch, where they put up a lot of their content as collateral and managed to have successes. And eventually, then they were taken over by, bought out by Disney. Disney paid more than $4 billion to buy out Marvel. And after that, you have Avengers and all of those who have been movies like Avengers that have been released. And each single film has in revenue delivered in excess of, you know, $1 billion, so many of those. So Disney has hit a gold mine with this investment. But Marvel moved with the times, listened to the customers. Now, this example also becomes very relevant in the current time, because right now Disney is receiving a lot of backlash from its customers and from its viewers. They have recently, in the last few years, moved with the trend of going woke in terms of their movie production, especially the movies which are animation cartoons directed at young children. For example, they have Snow White, which is running. Now, the original Snow White was released in 1937, a German fairy tale where you have this beautiful princess and you have an evil, stepmother, queen and dwarfs and what have you, and a prince, and it's a love story and everything. But now with the whole liberal movement and the left movement and this whole preoccupation with diversity, I'm not saying right or wrong, I'm simply stating the facts in terms of the motivations which went into them altering the original Snow White and modifying it for what they perceived would be received well by customers. So following the philosophy of diversity, equity and inclusion in terms of casting actors, ideas, they have changed, instead of a European lead, they have a lead lady of Colombian descent. They have changed various elements in terms of the focus not being on the love story, because they feel it is not in keeping with the feminist philosophy where a woman should not be dependent on a prince. And they have changed the story while there is some love angle and some character who's there, but they have effectively made the love story a subsection. And the prominent part has become princess or, Snow White wanting to reclaim her throne from the evil queen and becoming the leader that she was meant to be. So now this movie was just released 3-4 days back, and it is one of the worst performing Disney movies of all time. So, the opening weekend collections are a big indication of what the whether a movie is going to be a success or a failure. And one of the some of the worst performing opening weekends have been $50 million, and Snow White was probably somewhere at $48 million, and it has failed for a lot of reasons. Where in right from the time when they started taking existing fairy tales and animation films and modifying them for their liberal ideas and left ideas and DEI ideas, which are very noble. However, there was a massive backlash that why are you incorporating these, you know, woke ideas in existing concepts? Why don't you create a separate fairy tale called whatever else and bring in your woke ideas? Why are you taking an existing cultural figure of Snow White or an existing cultural figure of Little Mermaid and molding it and changing it to suit the current woke and left philosophy and thought process? And even if we leave the philosophies aside, bottom line, whatever their motivation was for making these changes and adapting the existing fairy tales and animation movies to current trends, thought processes. More than that, eventually, at the end of the day, they do want profitability, right? So despite supposedly catering to what they thought their consumers wanted, the customers don't seem to want that. And obviously, they have not taken that customer feedback. They have failed at understanding what the backlashes to the past few films which they have modified have resulted in terms of reviews, in terms of customer responses, in terms of box office. So they are obviously repeatedly failing at what their customers are trying to tell them. So it's interesting that while we're discussing an example where they have been phenomenally successful, they probably also need to go back to the drawing board and introspect in terms of, probably creating new content so that fans of the existing, fairy tales and animation, pop culture animation or childhood animation figures are not offended and create new content. Like X-Men did not take an original idea and modify it to become X-Men. It was a new concept to begin with. So likewise, you want to have a fairy tale where you want to bring in all the elements of DEI, you want to bring in various other woke, liberal, left ideas. Create a new fairy tale based on that. Don't take an existing one, is what their customers are trying to tell them and have been trying to tell them for a while. But let's see going forward whether there is a match in what the customers are telling and how Disney is responding with productions. Now, another example of where a very sensitive element of what customers desperately needed and were saying is the example of Nintendo, the video game. Now, Nintendo was going through a phase where they were really down and out. Also, what had happened in the North American market is that there had been a spate of launches where there had been very high-priced games which had come in, video games which had come in, but which were really bad quality, practically junk. So the North American video gamer was completely frustrated at having to pay high prices for really bad products. And at this point of time, while Nintendo was going through a lot of challenge and, a tough time, they identified this desperate need. And, if you know video gamers and if you have video gamers in your family, whatever part of the world that you are in, you will know that how addictive it is, how passionate those video gamers are about, their games. So given that there is this crazy craving and desire demand for quality video gaming, there was a huge gap in terms of the supply because the existing ones were flopping badly. People were not willing to pay for them. People were sick and tired. There was a lot of anything new which was launched, in the industry, people were very skeptical, very suspicious, disappointed. And at this point of time, Nintendo launched its, of course, Super Mario Brothers, which a lot of you would be familiar with, which is one of their most popular, video game movies have been made. And we all know, Mario and Luigi and all these characters and, you know, that little Italian chef jumping all over the place and trying to, you know, go through all these crazy universes to get to a castle or princess or whatever it might be. And they got their content right. They got their technology right. But the element that I'm trying to sensitize you to is that they got their timing bang on. They got their timing right too. So they came at a time when there was such a massive gap in the demand and supply that getting the customer then, they had a test market in a certain market, in a a small region. They did not go and launch at a country level. They had a test market in one or two cities. And it was such a resounding success that then the rest, after the launch, there was no turning back. And years and years after this is, decades and decades after this has happened, no competition has been able to, push Mario Brothers from the, position and the fan following that it has. So they got the timing so right that despite having a customer base which was very suspicious of anything new, you know, is it another high-priced product which is going to be a product which is going to be thrust down my throat? Despite all of that doubt and suspicion, it was a resounding success and they listened to what the customer wanted. You know, don't give us bad quality. Please don't give us bad quality. We are absolutely frustrated. And now people who are loyal to Mario Brothers are, you know, going to be retained. The next generations are going to be brought in. They are your promoters for all times to come. So these are examples of companies who listened to the customer, what the customer's voice was, who responded to that and got their act together and, responded accordingly. Now, when we talk about customer satisfaction, when we talk about various kinds of justice, etc., I have often mentioned to you that there is not all kind of resolution that customers are always looking for is compensatory, and that is very important because very often customer service people tend to go into this defensive trip of, oh my God, if I acknowledge that we made a mistake or there was a service delivery failure, then I will have to compensate the customer or the customer is going to ask for some sort of, benefit. And that is not always the case. So, for example, in the banking industry, typically all the larger banks have a dedicated cell in the CEO's office that is responding to customer complaints, which are addressed directly to the CEO. And the resolution turnaround time for those is far higher. And, very often you will see that the complaints which are going directly there, a lot of them are just looking for an acknowledgement. They are not looking for not even an apology. They are not even looking for a compensatory benefit. They are looking just for resolution and acknowledgement, and for them to have taken out the time to email directly and not send to a customer service email is shows how frustrated and desperate they are. And if you want to restore the customer satisfaction of this customer, then it's very important that not just the CEO teams, which of course will hopefully resolve in a very, very speedy turnaround time, but also all levels become sensitive that it's not always about just the money part and the monetary part, but it's also about acknowledgement, respect, and just admitting mistake, which is not such a big deal. In fact, a lot of the successful CEOs and top management are the ones who are aware and alert and who apologize when a situation arises where delivery has not happened in a way which is which the customer desired. I have mentioned a lot of these elements in terms of the compensatory strategies. Once again, I'm repeating, it's not always about money. A lot of times it's just about making the customer feel good, because how a customer feels is something which you may not be able to measure straight away, but is what is going to decide, is the customer going to come back to you? Is the customer going to behave like a promoter to you, or is he just going to do his business and take away? So I want to touch on now on the case of Zerodha, which is the discount broking company in India. And I want to touch on this case in terms of how they have grown and how listening to their customers and engaging their customers has been a very, very founding, fundamental pillar of the rate at which that they have grown. Talking about Zerodha, Zerodha was started in 2010 as a discount broking, online discount broking platform. Here, you know, when you have a tie-up with securities, DMAT players, securities players, you have to pay a certain percentage of fee, as transaction fee every time you buy and sell. And here the fees were substantially lower, so a low-cost option. Now, when they launched, a lot of the things which they kept in mind were that not only are they catering, yes, they are making it low cost, but not only are they catering to experienced traders and investors, but they also have to keep in mind that they have to make it simple enough for first timers and newcomers to also want to come on the platform, because their low cost and, you know, the only so many rupees per transaction and not as a percentage and all of those things attracted a lot of the first timers. Now, a lot of the first timers will not be familiar with a lot of the concepts, they had to make the platform and the whole design such that it can cater to both the categories of experienced and the novices, which is a very, very delicate balance to maintain. But having got that right, within the first 1 year, they opened 3,000 accounts. And today, they have more than 6.3 million accounts, which is a massive, massive number, you know. And some of the reasons for their success are over and above their design, costing, their catering to a variety of customers. They kept on listening to their customers. One of the constant feedback and requirement they seem to be getting was that while it's a very good platform, they do not have too much in terms of visual video content. And one of the things about Zerodha is, if you go to their site, their promoters, the Kamats, talk very, very regularly on the site and share their own experiences and keep a very grounded approach where they are including the customers in their story. So they observed that a lot of the voice was that they have not worked very proactively on the video content part of it. And they worked on it. They came up with very high-end content called Varsity, which is there on YouTube and on YouTube and on Instagram. They have the Daily Brief, which is a podcast, which is actually among the top five podcasts in the financial services space. And they worked on a lot of video content. And what is very interesting is that even after they started building these, their founder still says that I am still way behind in delivering on the video content part. And this is something that is going to continue to be a priority for me, because this is what my consumers are asking for. So you see how they are constantly listening to where the element of dissatisfaction is and responding to it. Now, also some of the other elements of transparency, which, you know, build a lot of trust and get them customer loyalty and make the customers promoters of Zerodha, is that, you know, they share wherever there are issues of technical glitches, various other lapses or various other issues rather, challenges which they share with regulators, that report they put on their site as well, for it to be very transparent with the customers, all the customers, that these are the issues we have faced and which we are working on. They share their root cause analysis report to which is sharing details and study on what they are working on. Now, it is no surprise that this company is valued at more than 88,000 crore rupees. Given the competitive tough market, given that markets have been so volatile, people get, you know, investors get scared and they run away from every time there's a collapse in the stock markets. And we have seen that happen so many times. They have managed to retain their revenue and growth and profitability growth. And the last revenue was over 8,000 crores, and their profitability in itself, you know, this is a high margin business. Despite, imagine being so low cost, imagine being the launching their platform called Coin, the first zero brokerage, one of the first zero brokerage platforms for mutual fund investments, launching their own mutual fund schemes, etc. Despite all of these cost, low cost benefits to the customer, they have such high margins that they clocked in a profitability of 4,700 crores, which is, as a percentage of revenue, a very, very, very healthy percentage of that. So you see how their model is working very well. Another thing which worked for them is that they were the first mover in the space. Today, you have a lot of other platforms like Grow, which are offering similar services and, of course, acquiring a lot of customers as well and also having a healthy growth. But Zerodha has a first mover name, which is always going to help them. There may be a lot of people who, despite maybe costing benefits on other platforms, started with Zerodha and do not find any major issue in terms of moving elsewhere. And to get a customer to move, there has to be a major lapse and not just a costing part. So here the customer satisfaction is obviously at a very healthy level, which is why they are not losing their customer. Customer staying, customer retention, as we have seen, is very, very profitable. It takes 5 to 25% more cost to bring in a new customer versus retaining a new customer as per versus retaining an existing customer as per studies. So all of these things are obviously leading to a bottom line growth for these, for Zerodha, which is a fantastic example of the top management staying involved, you know, on his, in his interviews. And what he talks about on the official page of Zerodha is, you know, he shared his story about recent story about losing his father, and you know how one of the founders got a stroke, which, you know, which is all very personal. He doesn't need to, but he's bringing himself down at a human level and making himself that much more accessible to his customers, and then also responding to customer changing expectations, requirements, when there is feedback which is being received. So these are cases which one can really learn from. Now, before I sign off and move to our last module for this segment, there are customer services of the most novel kind which exist in the world. And let me share this brief example with you. How many of you are familiar with Amex, American Express credit cards? Now, within Amex, they have a very high-end, you know, black card and, you know, high-end concierge services which are offered to their high net worth individuals and clients. And this concierge service is so unique and interesting that you know, there are rumors of the kind of not just the financial service which has been provided, but the kind of support system that they provide to their customers based on their requirements. There has been, a written about case of a customer requiring the concierge to take a motorcycle down to the Dead Sea to get a sample of water because the client's child had a science project which required a sample of water from there. There are other cases where the concierges have managed to get you discounted, the concert tickets to absolutely sold out concerts. If you're stuck in a place where there has been a strike of airport workers, and you know your routing has gone out of the window, they can, you know, use their permutation combinations, contacts, accessibility to find alternate routes for you. And all of these things are very, very personalized and customized. So when you look at the variety of services that can be provided across industries, across requirements, that is what is the differentiator between why someone will stay with you versus going to your competitor. Thank you.